Sarah McKenzie has been described as an Australian national treasure, an acclaimed jazz vocalist and pianist whose album Close Your Eyes won Best Jazz Album at the 2012 ARIA Awards. She's performed throughout Australia and Europe and has toured with Michael Bublé, Chris Botti, John Patitucci and Enrico Rava, who we saw in Sydney only last Monday night. Now based in Boston, Sarah has had the honour of being invited to perform her own material with the Boston Pops at Symphony Hall after her highly praised performances at Melbourne International's Jazz Festival, the Umbria Jazz Festival, the Boston Arts Festival, the Stonington Jazz Festival in Melbourne. She's been invited to play the Monterey and, of course, is direct to us tonight from the Wangaratta Festival of Jazz this year. Sarah just graduated from Berklee College of Music on a full tuition scholarship, and she's got some more good news about another competition that she's about to enter and has been shortlisted in New Jersey. Sarah McKenzie, welcome to Now's the Time.
Hello, how you doing?
Very, very well, and it's great to have you.
Great
on,
to
on
be
board.
Here, absolutely.
Sarah, can you mark the moment in time when you decided to seriously pursue singing as a career?
Yes, I had been checking out Oscar Peterson, and it was my crazy hobby, listening to Night Train and transcribing solos in my family's lounge room, the piano sort of in the middle. It wasn't until I went to Generations in Jazz, run by James Morrison, that I was sitting in the front row, I remember, and with all my friends, and James Morrison gets up and plays the trumpet with all these incredible musicians, and they're playing this music that I had thought was just a silly little hobby. They're playing jazz. And I remember it vividly. I was like, that's me.
So you were suddenly able to form a bridge between those old vinyl albums of Oscar and see the real thing live.
Yes.
And something clicked.
Something definitely clicked. Just a general feeling of absolute love and just wanting to be up there as well.
You must have had a teacher or something that really turned you on to jazz as far as pursuing it seriously.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't. You're lucky. I didn't grow up in a particularly musical family, and definitely not jazz. I had a dad though that could see I loved music, so he changed the approach of my piano teacher because I was just sort of my interest was wavering with scales and studies. He found me a rock and roll and blues piano teacher. It was incredible, and then he turned me on to jazz. He said, "Sarah, go down to the record store and find a jazz record. You've got the feel for this. You can do it." And I put it on. It was a compilation, and yeah, the first song was Oscar Peterson's Night Train.
So do you ever wonder why that was Peter Thompson, wasn't it?
Yes. Do you know Peter?
No, I don't.
Okay. Because he has become lost to me. I can't contact him.
Oh, okay.
His email doesn't work.
Right.
And I tell everyone this story about him, and he hasn't seen me since about 10, you know.
Do you ever wonder why he, you know, what he saw in your playing that made him direct you in that direction?
It would have been, I don't know, because I can't tell you how I probably sounded like rubbish back then, but you know, it was obviously the feeling. It's what is anything without it? So he's sensing a feeling in the blues, and he knows that blues is one of the strongest foundations of jazz. So he's just suggesting a natural progression, you know, to check out more harmony.
Fate is an amazing thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Now, you were successful in the Best Jazz Album in the 2012 ARIA Awards, Close Your Eyes, and that's the track we opened with tonight, The Way You Look Tonight. And you were telling me off air another exciting phase in your career so far when you go back to the States.
Yes, I'm very proud to be a finalist in the Sarah Vaughan International Vocal Competition, which is a little bit of a big deal, which is great. It's being judged by Christian McBride and Nina Freelon, Larry Rosen and Anne Hathaway. Campbell, sorry, and oh, she'd be great too, but I love that movie, The Devil Wears Prada. Anyway, there'll be none of that here. It'll be strictly serious jazz. No, I'm kidding. I'm so excited to be part of this competition. Only five were picked, and yeah, I'll do Australia proud.
So you're one of five finalists. So that gives you a fantastic chance.
Well, I'm sure the competition is fierce with, you know, being little down to the five. But, hey, I go, I play me, you know, make some good contacts, make friends with the finalists, and, you know, just.
Now, being the Sarah Vaughan vocal competition, is this open to male and female?
No, it's very observant. It's just female.
What's the most important elements for you when interpreting a song? You've got three albums out on ABC, so you're now sort of coming to this with much experience.
Yes, well, I love trying to interpret a song in my own way. That's a big part of who I am. I do everything from the piano with pen and paper, sit down, get the song, work out the right chords, and then, I don't know, I just start playing with it and trying to find chords that really feel good to me. There's no way of really putting it, but I go with the feeling. And then when I stumble on something, it just happened this morning, actually. I was practicing at the ABC, and I want to do an arrangement of Wouldn't It Be Lovely? And I was like, okay, we're going to need some quirky kind of intro. And then I just sort of started playing some little four things that I had heard something similar on a Dinah Washington CD. And then I sort of developed that, and, you know, and that's how it happens. Is that very convoluted?
No, it's quite organic.
Yes, no, definitely. So I'm big theory nerd, harmony fan, and that's all I did at Berkeley. I'm a big fan of this process. Study hard the mechanics of how everything is supposed to work. But when you come to write the music, forget it. And don't let any thought except for, oh, that sounds cool, or maybe musically I could go here. But I think if you start thinking mathematically about it, you're going to lose the organicness of it.
So you're allowing your instincts to kick in.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to take some music now from another one of your ABC releases. And I must also mention that I haven't brought in your most recent one, which is a bit silly, but what's the name of that one again?
I have a new album out on ABC Music. It's called We Could Be Lovers.
We Could Be Lovers.
We could.
That's right. Well, don't tempt me.
Oh, look out.
No, we're going to play Don't
Just
Tempt
close
Me.
Your
That's
eyes.
Right. Oh, now, Sarah, where were we?
Close your eyes.
Now, that was James Morrison on the trumpet.
Yeah, no, sorry, I'm just about to get silly. And stop tempting me. Yes, it was James. He's amazing, a true genius, I think, and I was humbled to have him play on this album.
And the title track from the album Don't Tempt Me on ABC. I know some songwriters who work and rework the bones of their material over long periods of time, and we're not talking weeks, but years. Do you ever need to do that?
Like I said, it is an organic process for me, but this is what happens. I will get the song within one of the songs on the album, That's It, I Quit, was written in maybe 20 minutes. Words, lyrics, music. It's a silly song and everyone loves it. And it's hilarious that it didn't take that long. We Could Be Lovers is more intricate, but it still only took 3 hours to do. Now, sometimes I will start writing a song and I will get to a block. And it's funny because I've felt when I leave them, I just go, okay, it's not ready to come yet. When I feel that I leave it and a few months have passed, somehow part of the story unfolds later. And then it's ready to come out. I'm a little bit strange like that, but I find it works for me. So, again, I do all the homework, I do the theory, and then when it comes to writing, very organic. If it wants to come, it comes. If it doesn't, I let it go.
Whatever works.
Mm-hmm.
Your generation, how do they perceive jazz in your eyes?
Well, jazz for me, really, the term is freedom of expression, you know? And I see it as art, really, as musical art. And I think we have to see it like that because otherwise, I don't know, you can just copy other people and what's the point of doing anything? Or, you know, is it the point to just really show off, show how many scales you can play or, you know, oh, he's so, you know. I think, no, you have to see it as art and an individual freedom of expression. So in saying that, there will always be this music. So it's not just one specific generation. There's always going to be people in my generation that are attracted to this music just because of that, because it's an individual expressive journey, if you will. Like, I think Joni Mitchell is more jazz than many people who claim to be jazz musicians, you know. I think it's more of a spirit than in some ways, you know. Yeah, I think about this a lot.
Now, what can we expect as far as a repertoire from you tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night I'm going to be playing songs from the new album, predominantly, although there'll be a couple from Don't Tempt Me and a couple from Close Your Eyes. But I'm super excited about this new album. We recorded it in New York with an incredible producer who worked with Norah Jones and Gregory Porter. It has a feel to it, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this music with people.
You mentioned Oscar Peterson being such an influence on you, or an inspiration to you earlier on, and I know Matt Baker, the piano player here
great.
In Sydney, and he loves Oscar Peterson as well.
Yes.
And he's based in New York City as well.
Mm-hmm.
So do you get down to New York City to perform a lot? Or?
Yes, I was just in New York. I had my first performance at Dizzy's at the Lincoln Center. Two shows with Ingrid Jensen on trumpet, and it was an amazing experience, an honor to play at this club, really.
Just describe that for our listeners, because, you know, that I mean, I can picture it because I've seen pictures mm-hmm. of it, but our listeners may not know that.
Dizzy's Jazz Club is an exquisite venue. I mean, that's an understatement. It's on the top floor, and the backdrop behind the stage are glass windows, and you look out of those glass windows onto Central Park and the New York City skyline. Unbelievable. It's beautiful that the theater is all wood, light colored. You can have dinner there, beautiful food. You know, it's a world-class venue, that's for sure.
While we are there, is there tangible differences between a New York City jazz audience and, say, a Sydney or an Australian jazz audience?
Yes. We're just a little bit more conservative, I think. You know, we love the music. There's no difference in the, you know, the love. You know, our jazz lovers here are just as passionate. It's just that, you know, we American crowds, oh my goodness, particularly if it's like a black African American singer, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, how you all doing tonight? Woo! You know, they get so into it. There could be possibly a standing ovation mid-set. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Always at the end, unless it's terrible, then you know you're really bad, you know? Whereas if you get a standing ovation with an Australian audience, you know it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
So we just, you know, we also a little more shy. Like, I've tried to get people to sing in Italy, in America, in Australia, and Australians are definitely the hardest, you know, to do some call and response or anything, which is, we're cool. We really are enjoying the music. We just don't want to be bothered too much, you know?
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. We're still just as passionate.
You know what? I know exactly what you're saying. I remember the first time I ever experienced, I think, a standing ovation was when I visited the 1996 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival.
Amazing.
And the crowd was just going just absolutely ballistic.
Mm, yep.
You know, it's very easy to get caught up in this.
It's wonderful. I love how freely they express themselves, you know. And because when other people around you are like, yeah, you know, and then you feel free to just make some noise. Whereas sometimes if people are just being very quiet around you, you feel scared to get up and really go, oh, I love it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why it's good. We process it in a different way. It's like I did a gig with James Morrison for some, it was a corporate thing for some accountants. It was an accounting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't make a single sound. And they were like very polite with their clapping. And I said to James after the show, did they not like it, or did I sing badly? And he's like, nah, mate, they love it. Just wait. They'll come up to you and just absolutely love it. It's just the way they don't know how to show that kind of emotion. And I kid you not, they came flooding up to us afterwards. We love it. Oh, amazing. You know, can we book you for this? And I'm like, that's crazy. There was just like tweet, 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 tweet in the audience before that.
Yeah.
So it's fine. You know, Italy's different. Like Europe's different. Germany, they're crazy over there. You know, everyone has a different style, and that's what makes the world great, you know? We're all different.
Jazz on the whole has been a very masculine art form over the years, and it's always been dominated by males, it seems, apart from singers, of course. But this seems to be changing, albeit very slowly. How do you feel about that, and do you ever encounter anything but equality on the bandstand?
Yeah, I do. I go by the ethos that as long as you are a hardworking, honest musician wanting to put something good out into the universe, you're always going to have people that want to be there with you. man or woman, you know. The reason that there's not more women right now is just historically, you know, we were childbearers, we didn't have equal rights, we weren't given the freedom to play. And also, you know, our heroes, Billie Holiday, they're drug addicts, prostitutes, you know. This is not the lifestyle for a proper young lady. But now it's a different thing, you know, and we have the choice as women, you know, to make our own decisions. And, you know, you don't have to be a prostitute to sing jazz. But we shouldn't forget that's the history of it. But no, so the simple question is, I don't experience it because I work damn hard at what I do, and I put together the best music that I can, and I strive to bring people together. It's sure, it's my music, it's my vision, but actually I believe in this music and bringing it to people for a greater purpose. So, you know, I want people to come along, and if they don't like it or they think I'm a girl and I can't play, then tough, just go away. So, you know, that's my energy.
You're now based in Boston.
Yes.
Sarah, what are your medium-term goals? We know that you're about to win the Sarah Vaughan.
No, I never win anything.
we've already discussed you.
I was a finalist in the James Morrison Scholarship. Mm. It took me 6 years to win that. I was a loser every single year for 6 years consecutively. Do you know how that felt?
Yeah, but you do have an aria.
Oh, yes, yes. But again, I didn't win it on the first year. My trend is never winning on the first year.
Anyway, we've got everything crossed for you.
Thanks.
As far as Sarah Vaughan, the vocal competition in New Jersey is concerned. But what are your medium-term goals for your career, Sarah?
Releasing this album in Europe and America, which is, I can't release the details, but there, I have one amazing opportunity coming up. So doing that and getting a good agent to start touring regularly. So that's my medium-term goals.
And your website is Sarah McKenzie Music?
SarahMcKenzieMusic.com.
And that's M-C-K,
yes,
by the way. Sarah McKenzie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.